So glad you're here with us. It's so good to see each and every one of you to come spend your Easter with us. You know, and in the first century church, they had this little traditional thing they did, because they didn't do it just on Easter time. They did it all the time. But when they would encounter one another, when Christians would encounter one another, they would say, "The Lord is risen," and then the response would be back, "The Lord is risen indeed." And so I want to do that. I do it every Easter, and so I just want to do it now. And whether you're a believer or not, whether you're a Christian or not, just play along with us. It won't hurt you. And we can just do this again. So as I say, you know, "The Lord is risen," just yell back. I mean, yell, get me fired up, okay? Say, "The Lord is risen indeed." Okay, you do it with me. "The Lord is risen."
"The Lord is risen indeed."
Yes. Ooh, that ought to get anybody going, right? Any preacher at least get us going. You know, we Christians, we have some strange beliefs, weird beliefs. And we're celebrating one of the weirdest ones today. You know, it's we believe that God became a man, just like us. And he died this hideous death. I mean, horrific death. He was dead 3 days. They buried him. But then he came back to life. And then he went back to be God. He ascended back into heaven. Do you believe that? Do you really believe that? Or is that just, you know, nonsense? What is that? And that's what we're going to be kind of talking about today. So to get started, I just want to ask you a question. Have you ever really, really, really planned on something? I mean, your heart was set on it. You had planned, invested into it, planned, counted, you know, the days, the hours, and the minutes until it was supposed to happen. I mean, you were just really thinking about it and was so excited and anticipating, and it fell through. You know, it's like at the last minute, it just didn't happen. Well, what were some of the feelings and emotions that you had? Did you kind of disappointed? Maybe even got a little depressed, you know, according to how much you were really counting on it. You got confused. Why did this not work? You know, you started complaining, you know, pointing out blame, especially if other people were involved in it. Maybe you let down, you felt let down, you felt sad. Maybe felt deceived. Maybe felt like other people had just deceived you to lead you to this was going to happen, and it didn't happen. You know, maybe you were pointing out blame. You know, you're angry. Ever felt that when you had really counted on something and it just didn't happen? Have you ever done that? Raise your hand if something like that's ever happened to you. Yeah, okay. How about with God? Have you ever felt that way about God? You know, you're planning on something, you have a dream, and God lets you down. He didn't do it right. He didn't do it at all. What? You ever feel like that about God? Have all those emotions and kind of think this whole thing's just nonsense? Well, this is what we're going to be looking at. See, on the original resurrection day, there were thousands and thousands of people in Jerusalem that had those feelings. They had followed this man all over the place for about 3 years, all over Galilee and all over Judea. They had invested into his ministry. Some of them had just totally sold out. They'd come out in the weather just to hear him talk. He was doing all these amazing things, and you know, they'd keep the kids out of school, and they'd camp out, and they were just doing all these things, and they just really were believing that he had them convinced that he was the long-awaited, they called it Messiah. That's the Old Testament, or the Hebrew word for Christ that we use in the New Testament. And they had him, he had them convinced that he was. But you know, he didn't do it. The leaders were saying he wasn't this Messiah, that he was an imposter. And they had him arrested. And then they took him, turned him over to the authorities to be executed. And they did. But we were still hoping. You know, we followed him through the streets of Jerusalem, him and the two criminals that they executed with him. And we were hoping that at the very last minute, maybe he would just do something. You know, that death squad was herding them through there on the way to the place called the Skull, the Golgotha, Calvary. I hoped at the last minute that maybe, just maybe, he would do something miraculous and show everybody that he really was this Messiah. But he didn't. He just died. Just like anybody would just die. Messiah can't die, can he? And so they beat on their chest. That was their expression of being disappointed and being depressed. That was their expression of being confused and complaining. That was the way they expressed of being let down, being sad, and feeling like they had been deceived. That was the way they would express how they just wanted to blame people and how they were just angry. Thousands and thousands of them. This is what was happening on Friday of the Sunday before what we call resurrection. So I want to read to you there, because what I want to talk about today is, I know that some of you struggle with this nonsense. Is this stuff real? You count it on God and he let you down. So let's talk about this a little bit today. I want to read in the Gospel according to Luke chapter 24. I'm going to read verses 1 through 11. So it's kind of a lengthy reading, but it'll get us there. So on the first day of the week, that would be Sunday, after that Friday, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. Now, what they did is they didn't embalm. What they did is they would put spices. It was a deodorizer, you know, that they would put around the body and on the body to deodorize the smell of a decaying body. And they made theirs, and it had been done, but you know how women are. It wasn't done well enough. You know, two guys did it, and they just didn't do it well enough. So these women were going to go back and fix that. And they found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. Now, while they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee, the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of the sinful men, be crucified, and on the third day be raised again." Then they remembered his words. Then they came back from the tomb, and they told all these things to the 11. Now, it was 12, but he took out Judas. 11, and to all the others. So it wasn't just the apostles. It was everybody they were telling. It was a lot of women. It was Mary Magdalene. It was Joanna. It was Mary, the mother of James, and the others, other women that were with them. So they weren't making this up. This was everybody saw this. And others with them who told this to the apostles. But they did not believe these silly, charismatic women seeing angels. And they did not believe the women because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Of course, that's our time. Now, it sounds even more like nonsense 2,000 years later. Have you ever felt that way? That, you know, this is nonsense. You know, somewhere along the way, I think maybe most of us have, along with our walk with the Lord. Do you know anybody that feels that way, that this is nonsense? See, atheists tell us it's nonsense. Atheists tell us it's just a myth that we made up so that we have some kind of hope. See, what they think is that when my heart stops beating and I stop breathing, that I just rot. I just decay. And that's it. What do you think? Is that the way it is? Or is there really a supernatural world around us with angels? Is there a supernatural world around us with a real risen Lord? Or is it nonsense? Is death only a door into eternity? Or is all of that just nonsense? What do you think? In our Bible, there are 66 books. There's 39 in the Old Testament, 27 in the New.
And in the New Testament, there are four manuscripts or letters that are called Gospels. Now, if you don't know what a Gospel is, what a Gospel is a writing about the life of Jesus Christ. And there's four of them. They write about the same thing. All of them write about Jesus and his life from his beginning till his ascension. That's what they are. And they, four different guys write about him: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Three of these guys are Jews. Matthew, Mark, and John are Jews. And one of them is a Gentile, Luke. And we've been studying Luke for a couple of years. And we've been going through it. And Luke looks at things a little different than others. And well, actually, they all do. See, the great thing about four people writing about the same thing is you get four different looks at it. You know, you look at something one way and you just get one dimension. But then if you look at it from another, you get a 2D. And then you can work around and get a 3D. And, with four of them, you can get a pretty good idea of it. And the reason I'm mentioning this is because Matthew and Mark and John, all of them, what they do is they say that the first post-resurrection people that he appeared to were women. That Jesus appeared to were women. But Luke doesn't say that. Luke says that the first people in post-resurrection that he appeared to was these two people that were leaving out of Jerusalem. The Passover was not over. The big feast was not over. They were just getting out of there. Because they were so disappointed. They were so depressed. They were so confused, and they were complaining. I'll show you this in just a minute. They were upset. They felt let down. They were sad. They felt like they had been deceived. They were pointing blame. They were just mad and angry. They're walking down the road. It's like what we do. You know, when we feel disappointed, don't we? We want to get away from whatever's disappointed us. We want to get away from there. And this is what they were doing. They were going home. Going home. This stuff is just nonsense. And Jesus appears to these two people. And I want to talk about them today. For the next 30 minutes or so, I want to just take you through their story. And about these two people that are just like many of us, disappointed, fighting with this nonsense thing. So I'll read it to you. It's in Luke chapter 24 and verse 13. And it says, now. Now, that's an important little word. And just hang on to it. I'm going to tell you about it in just a second. But now. Now, that same day, which was Resurrection Day, it was Sunday, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. So what is that, 2.5-3 hour walk? You know, unless you stop by McDonald's or whatever. And they were talking with each other about everything that had happened. And a lot had happened. And as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. And that's strange, isn't it? That's just strange. Now, that little word now, I want you to see this because it's very important. It's very important. It's the Greek word spelled I-D-O-U. Ido is how it would be pronounced. And what it means is behold. In another translation, the King James translation, that's the way it translates. Behold, look at this, is what it's saying. You know, see and lo, look. And this is what that little word means. And what Luke uses for it, he uses it 56 times in his writing. And what it means is, this is important. Look at this. I want you to see this. So this is important to you and me. This is something that we really need to see because it's now. It's now. Now, whether Jesus appeared to the women first or to these two walking first, I don't know, but I would have done it differently. I think it would be more impacting had Jesus suddenly appeared on top of the temple and started pointing people out. I heard you say, crucify this man and vaporize him. You know, I think that would be good. And I heard you say, away with this man, and and vaporize and just start. But that's not what he did. Or maybe it would have been good to appear to Annas and Caiaphas, because they were the ringleaders of
Jesus' demise, you know, that they were the ringleaders of, you know, deal with them, you know, take care of them, get them out of the way. But he didn't do that. Or Pilate, you know, Pilate allowed the whole thing to happen and, you know, hey, cut his head off, you know, whatever. But just deal with them. But why did he not? I mean, why did he do it his way and not my way? Why? Well, that's pretty obvious. But why did he do it that way? You know, why? I just want to tell you why. See, because he doesn't have anything to prove to anybody. He'll deal with Annas and Caiaphas and the masses and the atheists, and he'll deal with Pilate and he'll deal with them later, and he did. But why? You know, what's going on here? See, here's what I want us to see is that the very first ones that Jesus was concerned about were people like you and like me who are walking down the dusty roads of life trying to figure this thing out. And we get so confused. And we're let down by people. We're let down, feel like, by God. And we feel just like we've been used. We've been deceived. It's just nonsense. We have broken dreams. We have crucified hope. We have buried ambitions. And, you know, and we're going through life in this dark hole and trying to claw our way out. And where's God? Has he abandoned me? Has he hidden from me? Have I done something that ticked him off? You know, where are you? And the first one that he wanted to go to was people that were like that. People that were just confused. You know, he'll deal with the atheist one day. But now, today, he wants to touch you and me. He wants to help us know this isn't nonsense. This is real. And so this is what this story is about. So I really think it's got some things that we need to behold and that we can really see here and look at and see. So I'm gonna you know, when you see the pictures and the images and the paintings of the road to Emmaus or you see a movie, it always shows two guys, you know, two men walking. But the Bible doesn't say that. It could have been. I'm not saying it wasn't. I'm just saying, but the Bible doesn't say that. What I'm working at here is I want you to see something. I see two people that are a couple, a married couple. And it could have been a young married couple or an old married couple that didn't have children with them anyway. Well, children were either gone or either they hadn't had any yet. But this is what I'm saying. And here's why I see it, because later, and we'll read it eventually, but later on they invite Jesus into their home. And they prepare a meal. And in that day especially, that was the women's job. A man would be demeaned to cook. So they prepared Jesus a meal. So I think there's a woman involved. And the first one's name we're given, his name is Cleopas. But the second one's, we're not given anything. And I think this is more of what would happen. See, this is exactly what everybody else did that was married. They would go to Jerusalem for Passover and worship together. And they were believers. I believe in Jesus Christ. Obviously they were. And they'd gone to, Jesus was going to be there. It was a big time. They were going to Jerusalem. They were going to worship. And Jesus was there. No telling what he was going to do. So they went, they were there. It's exactly like most of us today. We worship with our spouse. Right? And then when it's over, we'll go out and get in our vehicles located in the parking lot. We'll drive home, as it were, down the dusty road and talk about how wonderful the sermon was that Pastor Delbert gave and how great a preacher he is or something like that, you know. but it wasn't wonderful for them. Their worship service was really, really bad. It was a disaster. In fact, it was a crash and burn. Now listen, I've given you some bad worship experiences. I've given you some bad Palm Sunday messages. But never anything like what these guys experienced. This was bad. And another thing that it says there, it says that they were kept from recognizing him. Now, what's that about? What? Why did he do that? Why were they kept from recognizing him? This is very interesting. How do you not recognize Jesus? He's got a halo, right? That floats around with him, right? Everywhere he goes, that halo goes. How do you miss that? And he got that dove, you know, that hovers up there. You know, he got that dove up there, and he glows, right? He glows. How do you miss that? Now my point is this. That is a horrible way to expect Jesus to appear to you. That is not. Listen, he is not going to appear to you as a glowing alien. That is not what he's going to be. It's always amazed me how men want to be like gods. You know, the ancient Egyptians, the pharaohs, want to be gods, want to be worshipped like gods. And, of course, the Roman emperors, they wanted to be worshipped. They wanted to be deified. But what's so amazing is that the real God wanted to be like us. And he did. He became like us. And he did it so well that you will miss him until he reveals himself to you. See, the Bible says this. Jesus says that no man can come to me except the Father draw him. What that means is you won't even know I'm around unless my Father opens your eyes so you can see. You can't even see the kingdom. You can't even enter the kingdom unless I'm revealed to you. And every post-resurrection experience that we read about in the Bible, they had difficulties recognizing him until he revealed himself. I mean, remember Mary Magdalene in the garden? Yeah, she thought he was a gardener until he said, "Mary." Ah, Rabboni. You know? And you got this. Thomas, remember Thomas? I'm not going to believe it, not going to believe it, not going to believe it until I can stick my fingers in his hands, until I can stick my hand up his side where they stick this. I'm not going to believe it, not going to believe it. So Jesus revealed himself to Thomas. My Lord and my God. Oh, my God. I mean, and it's going to be that way with you and with me. See, he's not going to come like a glowing alien. He's going to be there and you're not even going to know it. Have you ever felt like you missed God? You look back and say, I think I missed God. Wow. See, and this is the way it is. But why did he do it? You know, why? Okay, what's the reason in here? And here, I think, is the essence of what I want to relay to you today. See, I think it's the essence of what they needed to learn. See, had Jesus just immediately revealed himself to them, they would have missed the lesson that they needed to learn. When we are depressed and we're disappointed in life and with people and with God, we feel confused and complaining about life and God. And when we think everything is just nonsense and, you know, all this God stuff, and we go through this time where we're let down and we're sad and feel deceived, and we're angry and we're pointing blame. When we go through those times, we feel like God has hidden from us. He's abandoned us. No. He's walking right beside you. You just haven't recognized him yet. Yet. He desires to reveal himself to you. But if we're not cautious, we can miss him. See, this is the essence. He's walking right with us all the time. All the time. Now, I want to read a little bit more about this story so we can kind of see some more things. In verse 17. So he's walking with them, and he asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along? What are you guys talking about? What are you talking about?" And they stood still. Now, the question startled them. They just stopped in their tracks. And their faces downcast. And one of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Dude, are you the only visitor in Jerusalem that does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" And Jesus says, "What things?" Now, I got to ask you, did Jesus know what things? Come on. He was right in the middle of it, right? He knew what things. What things, he asked. Well, about Jesus of Nazareth? Now, he asked, they're going to let him have it. They replied, he was a prophet, powerful in the word and deed before God. And in all the people, we really believed he was of God. We believed he was the one. And the chief priests and our rulers handed him over to the and sentenced to death. And they crucified him. You know, and they're blaming the leaders. They were blaming Pilate. They're blaming everybody. And that's what you do when you get like this. You blame everything. And he says, but we had hope. Now I want we do something here at LifeGate nearly every Sunday. I get you to say something back to me. And I want you to say it like you did a while ago with the Lord is risen indeed. I want you to say that back to me. And so I want you to say that part back to me. But we had hope. Now, I'm going to count to three. And I want you to say it like you really mean it. Because when I do this, it's really to make a point, okay? So on three, say it all back to me. One, two, three. But
we had hope.
Yes, good. Now see, how many of you have ever had hope in something, but it just didn't work? See, and this was their problem. It wasn't that Jesus wasn't the Messiah. The problem was their hope was misfocused. Let me read. But we had hope that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. Well, that's a very little hope anyway. And what is more, so he's adding more. I mean, Jesus asked him, boy, they're letting him have it. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, I mean, he is really piling it on. In addition, some of our charismatic angel-seeing women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning. How many of you ever think some charismatic people are kind of weird anyway? I mean, so they're nonsense. Early this morning, but didn't find his body. You know, his body's gone. We're confused. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels. Yeah, angels. They saw angels. Who said he was alive? Then some of our companions, this would have been Peter and John who ran to the tomb, went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said. But him they did not see. This is nonsense. It's just nonsense. So Jesus walks up to you and me. He walks up to us. And he says, what you talking about? What's on your mind? See, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. What's on your heart? What's on your mind? What's got you downcast? What's got you confused? Talk to me about it. and they say, dude, don't you know these things? And that's what we say. Well, isn't it when we're going through stuff? What do you mean? You don't know what I'm going through? You don't know all these things that are happening in my life? You're the only. See, we think everybody knows what we're going through, and really nobody knows what we're going through. And Jesus says, what things? You know, and it's kind of humorous reading about them. You know, Jesus set them up and ambushed them, as it was, and set them up. And it's kind of humorous as we read about them. But when you're in that dark hole trying to claw yourself out, you know, when you got the broken heart, and when your dreams have been crucified, and your hope is buried, it ain't, it's not funny. And they said, where you been? You know, you're the only one that doesn't know that. Where you been? You've been like in a tomb somewhere with a big rock roll in front of it? I mean, where you been? Jesus had been there, hadn't he? He had died for these guys. They just had a misfocus. They didn't understand. And that's what we are sometimes. See, what Jesus will do, did with them and will do with you or I, what he will do is he'll draw this stuff out of us. He wants us to talk to him about it. Right. What are you talking about? What's on your heart? What's on your mind? What are you going through? Tell me about it. Maybe I can help you. I mean, knows he can help us, right? Let's talk about this thing. And he wants to draw it out of you. So he wants, he'll say, tell me about it. And buddy, did they? Did they? I mean, they piled it on. They talked about the whole thing. And what was so interesting there is that Jesus just listened. He just listened. He didn't interrupt him. He let him go on and on and on about this stuff. And that's what he wants to do with you and me. See, here's the thing. Is Jesus' death disqualified him to them
of being God? What has disqualified him to you? What is it that makes him not God for you? What makes him nonsense to you? Are you too intelligent? You know, is all that stuff just archaic? Is all that stuff just for ancient world? Do you just think you're smarter than God? You don't need God? Is he disqualified for that? See, here's the thing, is that in their minds, the crucifixion of Jesus made their hopes and dreams impossible. In the mind of God, the only way they could experience their hopes and dreams, the only way they could be possible, was with the crucifixion of Jesus. So the problem isn't with us or with them that God wasn't God. The problem is with us and them. The problem was is God wasn't being God like we wanted God to be God. He wasn't carrying the ball the way we wanted him to carry it. We thought he should carry it in his right arm, and he was carrying it in his left. He wasn't doing it our way. He didn't do it the way we hoped he would. It wasn't that he's not God. It's that we're missing something about God, right? So Jesus lets them go on and on and on about this, and then he responds. And this is good because this is kind of gives us the answer to some things here that we need to know. In Luke 24, verse 25, it says this. He said to them, Jesus said to them, how foolish you are. And how slow of heart to believe. Now, I want to just stop here because it appears he's rebuking them. He's not. And I'll show you. Just hold on to that word foolish for just right now. But he's not rebuking them. He says, how slow of heart to believe all, how much?
All
that the prophets had spoken. Did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them, and that's what he wants to do with you and you or I. That's what the Word of God is for, is to explain to us, explain to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. I want you to see this word foolish now. And a lot of times when the Bible uses the word foolish, it's the Greek word moros. And we get our English word moron from it. Like stupid, you know. You're stupid. You can't learn nothing. You know, you're dumb. You know, this is stupid. That's not what he's doing here. That's not what he uses here. The word he uses here is analytis, and what it means is not understood. There's something you don't understand. It's unintelligible. There's something you don't know. So what he says is you haven't believed all the scriptures. You don't know all there is to know about this subject. And what I've learned in my life is that specific thing. When I'm going through, when things have collapsed under me and I'm in the explosions of life, either one of two things are going on. I don't know enough, or I haven't obeyed and done what I know. See, here's the deal. Let me put it this way to us. I think this is more like you or I. I said, they had selective knowledge. They had selective learning, selective. They selected what they would know. And all they knew is what their preachers were telling them. And the preachers were wrong. He was the Messiah. The preachers were wrong, and so they only had selective knowledge. And that's what we do. We select how much and how and what we want to know. Every one of you are brilliant. You're not morons. You're not stupid. I'm not stupid. We just select what we want to know. Right? And here's the deal. See, every one of you are brilliant people. There is something, at least one thing, maybe two, that you know just about all there is to know about it. Because you have selected to know it. But have you selected enough to know about the things of God?
When your child is in one of these depression holes and they're trying to claw their way out, when your child is disappointed, when your child feels like they're depressed and they're upset and they're angry, even with you, mom and dad, when your child is in one of these states where they feel let down and they're angry, have you selected to know enough to help them? What about your friends? Can you help them? What about coworkers? What anybody can? Do you know enough to help anyone? See, we select what we know. And what their problem was is they had selective knowledge. They didn't know all there was to know about this. And this is exactly what happens to all of us just about. Is we just don't know enough. Huh? We don't know enough. So, I wish we had time to go through, and I could show you what Jesus did as he went from Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, all the way through, and showing him in the Scriptures. And maybe we'll do that in Luke sometimes. But the point right now is this, is that the information that they really needed, what they needed to know was right there all the time. And what you and I need to know is right there all the time. We just select not to know it. So your issues, the things that cause you depression, the things that cause you to get down and downcast, they're right there. You can know them. You can know them all the time. But we just select not to know it. See, what we think is this stuff's archaic. We think, I don't need God. I'm smart enough. I can get myself out of this. Yeah. And you're foolish. You're foolish. Now, I want to finish reading the story to you real quickly and get us done. Here, I feel wrong just quitting right here and not finishing the story for you. So let me read it to you, make a couple of points. In verse 28, it says this, as they approached the village, that would be Emmaus, to which they were going, Jesus acted as if he were going farther. Jesus is a hoot. You know, he'll set you up to get you to, and then he'll do something to get you to respond, to see what you're going to do. And they urged him strongly, stay with us. So this is why I think it was a couple. For it is nearly evening, and the day is almost over. So he went in to stay with them. And when he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. So there was likely a woman in there cooking the meal. Then their eyes were open, and they recognized him. Again, have you ever looked back at life and said, whoa, that was God? Yeah, they were looking back. Whoa, that was God. And he, poop, disappeared. He disappeared from their sight. And they asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the Scriptures to us? Here's what I want you to see. A couple quick points. Jesus will never intrude into your life without you inviting him in. He won't intrude into your family. He'll just walk on by. He wants you to invite him in. If you don't know how to do that, I'm going to tell you in just a minute. But he wants you to invite him in. And he doesn't want to come in so he can beat you over the head with a stick and play God on you. He wants to sit at a table. He wants to have fellowship and a relationship with you. He wants to talk to you. He really wants to help you through life, down that dusty road of life that you're trying to figure out. And then it said he poofed. What is that about? A couple of thoughts. There are going to be times in life when you can't find him. It's like he's hiding from you. It's like he's a man. He's not. He's right there. But see, he'll never leave you. Matthew 28:29 says, I'm with you always. And his Spirit is always with us. He's always with us, right? So we know that. We know that. But he's with us. But there are other times in life when he is so real. I've had moments when I had to turn around to see if somebody was in the room because I heard something audibly speak to me. There's sometimes he's so real that you can sit at a table and eat with him. And when those times happen, your heart burns because you can see life. There's nothing depressing. There's nothing that you don't understand. Everything is clear. And when those times happen, you want to hold on to them because those times will disappear until next time. And there will be a next time.
So here's what I really want us to get and take home with us today. We're all walking down this dusty road of life. We're trying to figure it out. We're trying to claw our way out of the dark holes that we find ourselves in. Whether it be in your relationships or your health or whatever's going on with you, there's going to be times and moments where it's just going to seem like nonsense. And you're trying to figure it out. And it seems like God's abandoned you. It feels like He's hiding from you. He's not. He's right there. He's walking with you. And He wants you to talk to Him about it. He wants to help you through it because there's obviously something you don't understand. Something's causing this. And He wants to bring clarity to you and help you understand it. And He will appear to you. He will reveal Himself to you. Now, Easter is not about eggs and rabbits. And I'm not going to get on all that. I'm not doing that to you. What I'm going to say is that, Easter is about the resurrection. And the resurrection is the most important event, not that's happened in humanity, but it's ever happened on this planet. I mean, here's the deal. Without the resurrection, we're all doomed for hell. We might as well be atheists. It would be better to be an atheist than there not to be a resurrection. With a resurrection, though, we can walk through a door and we can go into eternity of joy. We can go into eternity of joy, but right now we can have an abundant life. Jesus says, "I come to give you life and that more abundantly." Right? We can have a great life with the resurrection. And if you don't know how to do this, I'm going to tell you here right now. See, the book of Romans chapter 10 and verse 9 and 10, it says this, that if you confess with your mouth that He's Lord, you can just do that with you, just say that, and, conjunction, believe in your heart that God, here it is, that God raised Him from the dead. That's resurrection. Listen, it's not mental assent. It's not nonsense. It can't be nonsense. It's got to be in your heart that you believe God raised Him from the dead. And if it is, then you're saved. And He goes on, He says, for with the heart we believe into righteousness. We can have a right life, a good life. And with the mouth we confess our salvation. So if you're not a Christ follower, that's all you got to do. It's about the resurrection. You can't be saved without it. You can't be saved thinking that it's nonsense. And you confess it. That's why I wanted you to say, the Lord is risen indeed. Even if you didn't believe it then, I hope you believe it now. You're confessing it. Because what He wants to do with each and every one of us is have an abundant life, have a great life. He wants you to know He loves you. It's all about you. And now, He wants to comfort you. Let me pray for you. Father, thank You for our time. Thank You for this amazing, amazing time of Easter. Thank You. Thank You for the resurrection. Thank You for Jesus. Thank You for helping each and every single one of us. Now, Father, I pray that if anyone here does not believe in You, that maybe something's been said to quicken in their heart, that they will. They'll believe that God really raised Jesus from the dead. And they'll confess that with their mouth when they can be saved. In the name of Jesus, we thank You. Amen. Now what we're going to do...